Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. And it is now or never, or this is it, folks. I mean, we're living in a time where everything has come to a boiling point. I mean, as I've talked about, this is the final political war that has to be fought. We have to make decisions. We have to actually choose. Are we going to live the law? Or are we going to be subjects to those who have chosen and have placed themselves in a position to rule us? And it is actually very darker. It's much darker than that, that the evil one, it wants to subjugate the world. And so we clearly understand what's really at play here. Now, you know, we've been at war. I mean, Islam declared war when in the, you know, 7th century or whenever. You know, they've declared war against all of the world to subjugate the world to Islam. Communism came along and basically, you know, under the guise of the Illuminati, said we will use compulsion and subjugate the world by using the governments. They actually, you know, because if you read Robinson's conspiracy against a conspiracy to destroy all of the religions and governments of Europe. I mean, if that book was written with 1795, 6, whatever. And if you read that book, I mean, he lays it out that the plan had already come forth to pervert all of the religions and governments to actually conspire and seize control of them and to manipulate them. So you can't tell me that, you know, there are multiple forces and they're all out there on the battlefield. We have everything it requires for us to succeed. It is, you know, for you to succeed spiritually, you need the scriptures. You need to have, you know, an intimate relationship with the Spirit, with Christ, with Him. And so, you know, you use the scriptures to do that. You use your religious, you know, worship and so forth. But when it comes to living and governing, He actually gave us, inspired a very specific document that says, live by this and ye will be free. And we were free, other than the times when we've allowed ourselves to be subjugated to things that are not of that law. And as I pointed out yesterday, that is a big wad of unconstitutional, unlawful law, the color of law that we're living under. So, okay. Now, what we have to do, and as a matter of fact, one of the things I want you to know, that before every show, and, you know, I live my life with a prayer in my heart that I might be a tool in His hands in preserving liberty, that His gospel, that His message, His news can go forth. And so this may seem like a righteous cause. It may seem like a political cause. I believe that this is our cause as citizens. Those who are citizens of this land of liberty have this birthright and birth responsibility to do these things. I don't think that we have a choice on this. So, one of the things that we always do, and since it is January 2nd, this day stands out in my mind and in my life in so many different ways, and the most significant way that this day stands out is the Tory Acts by Continental Congress. And that's because the second Tory Act, which was the largest of the Tory Acts, was basically promulgated. And it happened to be promulgated on January 2nd, 1776. Now, we already kind of understand the history that the colonies were basically colonies of England. It was English rule, the monarchy, and we were subjects to that monarch. And that the monarch kind of established this ruse thing called this republican form of governing, the parliament. where the parliament actually represented the people. It was a democratic parliament. There were two classes of people that were represented. There were the people themselves were represented in the House of Commons. And then the aristocrats, the bankers, those who had the influence within the land of England or within Britain, they were given the representation in the House of Lords. And therefore, we can see how, you know, there was obviously a disadvantage between the two houses. And so, as they started using the Stamp Acts, as they started using tyranny and basically putting the burden of the debts of Britain upon the colonies, we were pretty rich out here. They said, we're going to put the burdens on them. And I hope you understand, one of the things that most people lose sight of is the burden of the tax on the Stamp Acts. If I remember correctly, the tax on that tea was 0.1 cents. And at that point in time, it was completely repugnant and unacceptable to those who were involved in the, you know, the Tea Party. And those who were involved in the initial resistance, the Sons of Liberty and so forth, I mean, they were responding to this form of taxation that they didn't have to deal with for a long, long time. It's very similar to the territories under the U.S. government. Territories weren't subject to tax. They had to become a state. This is why the design, and most people didn't even understand this, Madison didn't even understand this, that it became a driving factor. It became a motivator for the federal government to actually form more states. What would have happened if... Let's take the Dakotas, let's take, you know, Minnesota, let's take Montana, let's take a big swath of the plains, you know, not the mountains, but just the plains right there from Montana all the way down to Kansas, you know, this big, huge swath of plains. Let's say that that became one state. Well, shoot, I mean, the federal government actually made more money and had a better advantage by having more states than they did on having, you know, one big state. Because as more states joined the Union, and the faster they could get to that point, so making them smaller made more sense because then they could get the needed population in that smaller area. So when we look at the motivation in growing the Republic, the drive for manifest destiny, part of that manipulation was to help grow the revenue of the federal government. Because once a state became a state, it received apportionment, and what went hand in hand with apportionment was taxation. Oh, now that you're a state, and now that you have actual representation, that voting representation in Congress, we can now tax you. Ah, see, there's a reason for all of this. But that was something that was baked into the Constitution that kept the federal government from actually doing things. But it didn't take long for them to start realizing, oh, well, if we withhold stuff. So anyway, I'm going down a rat hole on, you know, some history. And we'll get into the Manifest Destiny. We'll get into the Enabling Acts. We got a whole year ahead of us. But today, right now, the framework we're really looking at is the monarchical government that existed. And under the monarchical framework, we had jural assemblies. We had the ability as citizens, as Englishmen, to call and create a common law grand jury. And we could go to the sheriff and actually get the, and create a common law grand jury to actually petition the king. So in many ways, at this point in time, throughout the colonies, there were many different efforts that were organizing and forming to petition the king. We already know that in the Declaration of Independence, Thomas Jefferson referenced this, right? And so when we get to the Declaration of Independence, I will actually prove this. But all you got to do is look, search for the word petition. It was there after repeated petition. They turned a deaf ear to us. In other words, they were denying us this inalienable right that was guaranteed by the Magna Carta and the glorious Bill of Rights. They're denying that same right under the Constitution. And when our local government refuses to hear our petitions, we need to replace them with those who will actually stand up and support our petitions and forward them, endorse them, and become our champions of the Constitution. This is what we need in our local counties today. Now, in 1775, October 6th, after Continental Congress kind of formed and George Washington was kind of getting organized to go up into Massachusetts, and I think he was probably already up there by October 6th. But looking at the lay of the land, this is what Continental Congress sent out. And they actually identify who they're sending this out to. It says, resolved, this is Continental Congress, October 6, 1775, resolved that it be recommended to the several provincial assemblies or conventions and councils or committees of safety. Now, it's interesting how clearly they identified assemblies, they identified conventions, they basically identified councils. The last thing that they identified was these committees of safety. In other words, that was the smallest group. But these were basically involved citizens seeking, you know, their rights as Englishmen to redress their grievances. And so he says, it states that these local assemblies, conventions, councils, or committees of safety, and this is what they're calling upon them to do, to arrest and secure every person in their respective colonies who's going at large, in their opinion, endanger the safety of the colony or the liberties of America. So the very first thing the Continental Congress basically did was they sent out this like bench warrant on any and all people who were, you know, going at large in their opinion, endangering the safety of the colony and or the liberties of America. In other words, those who were British loyalists, they wanted to arrest. Now, think about this. You know, the Continental Congress kind of formed through it wasn't a full movement. I want you to understand that there wasn't a statewide election. As a matter of fact, at this point in time, the king had seized control of the colonies. There wasn't a colony-wide election to create these representatives. They actually did this kind of in secret. This became a secret government. Had they actually, right in the face of, you know, these representatives of the British Crown say, oh, okay, we're having these elections and these are going to be our representatives, they would have had these guys arrested and hanged just like that. They knew what they were doing was not going to be embraced by the provincial, or I should say these puppet governments that the king had created. So why were they so emboldened to think, oh, well, we can arrest these folks? Because they thought that they had the numbers. Well, what ended up happening was that they were communicated back to Continental Congress from these committees, from these provincial organizations, these local organizations, and said, hey, do you realize what you're asking us to do? You know, you're just putting us in jeopardy. You know, do you want us to just basically go and tell the government, you know, where you guys are so that they can just come and arrest you instead? They said, hey, come on, we got to have a little secrecy here. You know, the only thing that was really clear was George Washington and his what we'll call the Continental militiamen. But actually, it wasn't really an army. It was just the local people from, it wasn't the full Continental. It was the militia that had been organized from, Massachusetts, and I don't know what other states maybe, but from that area they organized, they brought their militia together, and this is where they started bringing resources from these other colonies. If I remember correctly, a part of that battle before this, you know, July, or I should say before that 1776, you know, escape out of Massachusetts, if I remember correctly, they had, you know, these artillery brought down from Saratoga, or, you know, I forget the gentleman, David McCullough, I believe, is the one that did 1776. Really good history on this. But if you really look at what was going on, the only thing that was really evident to Britain was that the colonies had kind of created this militia or segments of the colony and colonies, neighboring colonies, kind of pulled together and says, we're going to repel you. We're going to fight you. And so that was the only thing that was obvious. The fact that there was a Continental Congress somewhere down in Philadelphia or wherever they were at that point in time didn't matter because it was kind of secret. So Continental Congress, after this first request to arrest these folks, came back in January 2nd, just a few months later, 1776, and this is why we're reading it today. And this is what they said. Whereas it has been represented to this Congress that divers, honest, and well-meaning but uninformed people in these colonies have, by the art and address of minstrel agents, been deceived and drawn into erroneous opinions respecting the American cause and the probable issue of the present contest. And then it goes, resolved that it be recommended to the different committees, now at this point they just kind of simplify it by the committees, and other friends to American liberty in the said colonies, to treat all such persons with kindness and attention, to consider them as the inhabitants of a country determined to be free, and to view their errors as proceeding rather from want of information than want of virtue or public spirit, to explain to them the origin, nature, and extent of the present controversy, to acquaint them with the fate of the numerous petitions presented to the Majesty, as well as by assemblies as by Congresses, for reconciliation and redress of grievances. Right there, folks, right there. Petitions and redresses of grievances. When you're living under tyranny, this is what we do, and this is what we actually have protected by the law of the land. And that the last from this Congress, humbly requesting the single favor of being heard, like all the others, has proved unsuccessful, to unfold them the various arts of administration to ensnare and enslave us, and the manner in which we have been cruelly driven to defend by arms those very rights, liberties, and estates which we and our forefathers had long enjoyed unmolested in the reigns of His Present Majesty's predecessors. And it is hereby recommended to all conventions and assemblies. And if you want to highlight that, you know, it's not just committees, assemblies and conventions in these colonies liberally to distribute among the people the proceedings of this and the former Congress, the late speeches of the great patriots in both houses of Parliament relative to American grievances, and such other pamphlets and papers as tend to elucidate or to help clarify the merits of the American cause, the Congress being fully persuaded, the more our right to the enjoyment of our ancient liberties and privileges is examined, the more unjust and necessary our present opposition to minstrel tyranny will be. And with respect to all such unworthy Americans as, regardless of their duty to their Creator, their country and prosperity, have taken part with our oppressors and influenced by the hope or possession of ignominious rewards, strive to recommend themselves to the bounty of administration by misrepresenting and traducing, T-A-R-D-U-C-I-N-G. In other words, criticizing. I would never have used that word, but that's an archaic way of doing it. The conduct and principles of the Friends of American Liberty and opposing every measure formed for its preservation and security. Now, as they're going through this, they're obviously really selling this whole point that, you know, we have these rights and we demand that these rights be heard. At this point, folks, they still hadn't had the Declaration of Independence. They had been pleading and pleading and saying, you can't do this. We have rights. You're taxing us. We have a right of representation. We have a right to be within the body of Parliament, both in both houses, the House of Lords and the House of Commons. Resolve that it be, as a matter of fact, where would George Washington have fallen if all of a sudden Britain had changed their tune and they opened up members of the colonies to enter into both houses? Well, I think Washington, because he was the prominent military man in the colonies at the time, I think Washington probably would have went into the House of Lords. Now, he did have predilections, you know, throughout his, you know, moving towards the Constitution of being an aristocrat because of his seeking the involvement in the Society of the Cincinnati. And so, you know, that was their paradigm. I'm just here telling you folks that when you really look at their paradigm, their whole world had, you know, been generations and generations and generations of living under the Magna Carta and this monarchical rule. So when they started actually fighting against the monarch and their fundamental rights, they weren't looking to really create something new. They were just demanding their rights. So they maintained this functioning. It's kind of like when you look at what Martin Luther did, they didn't reform Christianity with his theses. They realized that the only way they could actually, you know, be more compliant to the scriptures was to reform Christianity to do so. They were hoping that the Catholic Church would have reformed, but they didn't. So nevertheless, moving forward, the next resolved that it be recommended to the different assemblies, conventions, and committees or councils of safety, now it's councils of safety, in the United Colonies, by the most speedy and effectual measures to frustrate the mischievous machinations and restrain the wicked practices of these men. And it is the opinion of this Congress that they ought to be disarmed and the more dangerous among them either kept in safe custody or bound with sufficient sureties to their good behavior. And in order that the said assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety may be enabled with greater ease and facility to carry this resolution into execution. Now, I'm going to take a quick aside here. Think about this, folks, because we got less than a minute left before the break. Think about this. You know, here we are actually, you know, trying to feud or trying to demand what is we believe is rightfully ours within a system and government that we're really not trying to topple at this point in time. But what we want is we want to be heard. We want our voices to actually be heard so that we can enjoy the rights of an Englishman. Doggone it, we have these rights and we demand them. And so they're trying to get the rest of these folks, and the rest of these folks are actually happy. The majority, there were lots of Americans that were happy to just go along up to this point, and they didn't see what the ruckus was all about until the war really started raging forward. And it's still, the war still wasn't highly supported, but what they ended up doing was they started taking note by these Tory acts of who the real British loyalists were and who those people that harmed them. Because what ended up coming around the corner, you know, was the actual comeuppings that actually caused the second iteration of the Revolutionary War. We'll be right back.
The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contribution page, and you can become a listed supporter of liberty. Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so as we kind of peel the onion back, and as we're looking at really what was going on, you know, this right of assembly, this right of jural assemblies, as they called them, because this is what they were doing. They were assembling. This was an English right. When it came to government, which was the king, the mechanism under the Magna Carta was you would form, we would form these assemblies, these councils, these conventions, and then call forth and petition. And that's exactly what they were doing. But today, we don't have a British government. So the reason why I'm haranguing on all of this is because this concept that the people have a right. No, we don't have a right to create assemblies, conventions, and councils to take on the federal government. Ah, then what do we have the right to do? We have the right to petition our representatives, not this ambiguous federal government. In other words, when we petition, you know, we can actually, I wouldn't call it an assembly. We need to, you know, basically unite as a body citizens in the county level. And who are our local representatives? There you go. They are the ones that you then have to say, look, it's your job. Because back in those days, it was absolutely unreasonable that the citizens would all have to get on their horses and go to D.C. or go to the State House. Travel was, you know, required. It was baked into the politicians. These county committees, these county boards of supervisors, that's why they had a county committeeman. The county committeeman was directly engaged in actually going to the State House to speak on behalf of the county board, the county body, because in those days they didn't have a phone to pick up. So when we look at how we've kind of created a system and the whole purpose of how everything kind of moved along, we have to start understanding that our world shifted dramatically when we created that Constitution. We severed we severed the concept and doctrine of magistrates. And we actually divvied up and created three levels of a form of government, separating the magistrate into a legislative, an executive, and a judiciary at all three levels. Well, the problem is that most counties are not in that form. Most counties are only legislative and judicial. And most people think, oh, well, because under Britain it was the sheriff. No. The sheriff's jurisdiction is limited and he only enforces the law. He's not a magistrate. he is not a representative. He is actually held to enforcing the law. And his jurisdiction ends with that county. Now, there's nothing to keep the sheriff from actually putting out an APB for the arrest of their governor and for the arrest of very specific people in the state legislature. There's nothing keeping him from demanding that these people be held accountable to their oath of office and their violations. The sheriff actually is responsible not just for, you know, enforcing some code, the law itself. Which is why when we look at the judiciary has been shrouded and wrapped up in this legal labyrinth of a prosecutor and all of this crap. This is why, you know, if we actually formed our counties the way they're supposed to be formed, we would solve, we would be on the path of solving lots of our problems. So, back to this next resolve. Resolved that they be authorized to call to their aid whatever continental troops stationed in or near their respective colonies may be conveniently spared from their more immediate duty, and the commanding officers of such troops are hereby directed to afford these said assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety all such assistance in executing this resolution as they may require and which consistent with the good of the service may be supplied. Resolved that all, I just want to be clear here. I don't think George Washington was attuned to this expanse of his power and this, you know, this responsibility that they were levying upon him, because I'm here to tell you that with him being tied up in Massachusetts for this first year, it was absolutely, a miracle that he was able to actually escape out of Back Bay. Anyway, and that was the beginning of a series of miracles that this man actually witnessed and why he actually became such a righteous man. Resolved that all detachments of Continental troops which may be ordered on the business in the foregoing resolution mentioned be, while so employed, under the direction and control of the assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety aforesaid. Now, see, again, this is the second time they referred to councils of safety, not committees of safety. So why is it that people, you know, kind of cling on to the single concept of committees of safety? Oh, well, that's what it was. Well, I'm giving you source documents, and it wasn't just, it was actually whatever you wanted to call it. And that's my whole point when I tell people, whatever you want to call yourselves, you know, but keep it tuned to your council or your committee of your county. Operate within the framework of the government that we have. And that framework, the base of that framework is your county. Resolve that it be recommended to all the United Colonies. See, at this point in time, they weren't independent states. They didn't start calling themselves states and nations. They were still subjects to the king. That it be recommended to all United Colonies to aid each other on request from their respective assemblies, conventions, committees, or councils of safety and county committees on every emergency, and to cultivate, cherish, and increase the present happy and necessary union by a continual interchange of mutual good offices. And whereas the execrable barbarity with which this unhappy war has been conducted on the part of our enemies, such as burning our defenseless towns and villages, exposing their inhabitants without regard to sex or age, to all the miseries of such loss of property, the rigor of the season, and inhumane devastation can inflict exciting domestic insurrections and murders, bribing the savages to desolate our frontiers and casting such of us as the fortune of war has put into their power into goals there to languish with irons and want, compelling the inhabitants of Boston, in violation of the treaty, to remain confined within the town, exposed to the insolence of the soldiery and their enormities, as the mention of which decency and humanity will forever blush, may justly provoke the inhabitants of these colonies to retaliation. So they're giving you an inside glimpse of what the heck's going on. Britain was being very vicious. Folks, they had a history of this. When it came to keeping control and maintaining control, they did anything and everything. Everything was always on the table. It didn't matter how barbaric it was. You can't tell me that live organ harvesting was just something that came up out of China. There's no doubt in my mind this was actually something that was, because we see this. We have seen this throughout the history, that that type of barbaric tone towards life only comes from the evil one. And if you understand Britain's, you know, involvement and their fingers on all of these strings, you can actually see that, you know, these things aren't just happening as coincidences, that there has always been some form of either inspiration and or direction. Resolved that it be recommended to them to continue mindful that humanity ought to distinguish the brave, that cruelty should find no admission among a free people, and to take care that no page in the annals of America be stained by a recital of any action which justice or Christianity may condemn, and to rest assured that whenever retaliation may be necessary or tend to their security, this Congress will undertake the disagreeable task. Resolved that the assemblies, conventions, or committees, or councils of safety be requested with forthwith to transmit to this Congress copies of all the petitions, memorials, and remonstrances which have been by their respective colonies presented to the throne or either house of parliament since the year 1762, and that they also informed this Congress whether any and what answers were given to them. So look at this. They're actually now doing a data call. In this last resolve, they're asking all of the colonies, all of these councils, to provide everything that they have petitioned, requested, the remonstrances, all of these things that they have actually gone to the throne and parliament over. And they wanted to also be given, in other words, the full data on what they sent out to the parliament and the throne, or what came back from them, so that they had all the facts in front of them. So in other words, January 2nd was the time when they actually requested a data call, not just kind of, you know, reshaping how to start treating and how to help people understand, you know, just don't go out and arrest these people. We got to methodically go down this very specific path. And in addition, we're asking you to give us everything that you've done, because they wanted to get their arms around, you know, how deaf the monarchs and parliament's ears were to the pleas of the people. And so, because just remember, this is going to shape the Declaration of Independence. Now, in March 14, 1776, the third Tory Act came out. Resolved that it be recommended to the several assemblies, conventions, and councils or committees of safety of the United Colonies, immediately to the cause, all persons to be disarmed within the respective colonies who are notoriously disaffected to the cause of America, or who have not associated and shall refuse to associate to defend by arms these United Colonies against the hostile attempts of British fleets and armies, and to apply the arms taken from each person in each respective colony in the first place to the arming of the Continental troops raised in said colony. In the next, to the arming such troops as are raised by the colony for its own defense, and the residue to be applied to the arming associators, that the arms, when taken, be appraised by indifferent persons, and such are to be applied to the army, the Continental troops, be paid for by Congress, and the residue by the respective assemblies, conventions, or councils, or committees of safety. Now, there are two more Tory acts that came out. And so, as you can see, what they're doing is basically going out, confiscating, arresting these people, taking their arms, and using those arms for the Continental Army. So you could see that, you know, in March, things were ramping up more towards war. Now that the weather was becoming more favorable to do so. With June 18th, this is what Continental Congress sent out now. Resolved that no man in these colonies charged with being a Tory or unfriendly to the cause of American liberty be injured in his person or property or in any manner whatever distributed unless the proceeding against him be founded on an order of this Congress or the Assembly, Convention, Council, or Committee of Safety of the Colony or Committee of Inspection and Observation of the district wherein he resides, provided that this resolution shall not prevent the apprehending any person found in the commission of some act destructive of American liberty or unjustly suspected of a design to commit such act and intending to escape and begin and bringing such person before proper authority for examination and trial. Now, the last one, June 24th. Now, okay, so this is, you know, a couple of weeks before, and they've already had Thomas Jefferson, John Adams, and Benjamin Franklin working in the committee of making the Declaration of Independence. So at this point in time, the Declaration of Independence is becoming a reality. They haven't released it yet, but they're working on it. Resolved that all persons abiding within the United Colonies, still being called colonies, and deriving protection from the laws of the same, owe allegiance to the said laws and are members of such colony, and that all persons passing through, visiting, or make a temporary stay in any of the said colonies, being entitled to the protection of the laws during the time of such passage, visitation, or temporary stay, owe during the same time allegiance thereto, that all persons of or owing allegiance to the United Colonies, as before described, who shall levy war against any of the said colonies within the same, or be abhorrent to the King of Great Britain or others, the enemies of said colonies, or any of them within the same, given to him or them aid and comfort, are guilty of treason against such colony. That it be recommended to the legislature of the several United Colonies to pass laws for punishing in such manner as to them shall see fit. Such persons before described as shall be provable attained of the open deed by the people of their condition of any of the treasons before described. And so what I'm going to do, because last year when we did the ratification debates, we kind of posted these documents. And because I've just read these things verbatim and struggled with a few different words. But what I want to do is I'm going to put this up on the website. So with the podcast page, you'll actually have the documents that we're reading. So I would ask you, when you sit down and listen to this show, or when you sit down and listen to these shows, because this is educational. This is all about giving you intelligence in understanding what was going on. And what happened at this point in time? These men were demanding their liberties. At this point, they had still not broken. They did not declare independence until a couple of weeks later. But they demanded that their liberties be adhered to and that the laws be adhered to. And therefore, they were calling for these people to be charged with treason against the colony by actually supporting the tyranny that the king was waging against these Englishmen who had these guaranteed rights, these inalienable rights. So, as we kind of look at what was happening, the paradigm of functioning as a society, as a citizen body against a magistrate was the rule of the day. What this means, folks, is that they had not truly shifted into a republican form of government. Now, at this exact same time, John Adams had already published, and they actually started going down this path prior to forming the Continental Congress, actually, when you really look at it. And we kind of expose all of this in the article of Why Counties Matter Most, that, you know, they already started going down a republican form of government, one that was much like Parliament in Britain. In other words, they weren't really making such a significant change where they, you know, everything was kind of put aside. So the problem was, as they started standing up and using the same form of government, a republican form of government that was democratical under a monarch. Well, instead of having a monarch, they created a Continental Congress. The Continental Congress became the new magistrate. And that the governors were the magistrates of the states. In other words, they really didn't change how they were governing themselves. They still kind of used the same umbrella, that the rights of the jural assemblies and those types of things were still in force, because the only mechanism the people had against this single magistrate government was actually using jural assemblies. They didn't have true representatives. They had representation in Continental Congress, but whatever that body decided, that was what they were basically subjugating or subjecting to the colonies or the new states that were forming. So in other words, this evolution of migrating from this organic matter, this political matter of, you know, a magistrate form of government is still functioning in very similar ways. So in other words, when they finally abandoned the Articles of Confederation going into the Constitution, when they finally, you know, turned their backs and said, we're creating a whole new government, one that will be better with checks and balances, one that will actually be applied to every level of government, that everybody will recognize, because what they did by breaking the magistrate form into three separate functions of legislative, executive, and judiciary, that became the application of the day for the states and counties. It's just that they didn't inflict it upon the states. Why? Because, as I told you, the counties and states themselves had already been formed, and they would have rejected the Constitution as being too authoritative in demanding change. So God actually inspired this divine order that became the logical divine order that the states absolutely adopted. How did they do that? They reformed their legislative bodies into bicameral legislative bodies, and that the counties were integral as a sub-republic like the national republic. In other words, you had the federal government with the states being the parties and the overseers of that government, and within the states you had counties that created that state government and oversaw that state constitution and government. In other words, the exact same application, the exact same parsing of how we are to govern, making the foundation of government, the bedrock of our government, being we the people and the counties, or the government that we institute. This is where the bulk of the power, the bulk of the political power of America resides, is at your county level. The limited powers that we delegate to the state to serve as a general government, to serve the counties just like the federal government's responsibility to serve the states and preserve their liberties and sovereignty, the same for the states. This just unraveled by the seed of the Constitution. And it wasn't as if there was this plan. There's no one that has any documentation that says this is what's going to happen from this Constitution. But the divine order and its brilliance actually shined, that all of the states emulated this federal framework. Every single one of them. And as a matter of fact, every new state joining the Union emulated this exact same model. The only problem was, because government was so insignificant in what we were doing in America, that nobody thought that it would grow to this leviathan of tyranny. Nobody ever thought it would get there. I mean, it's one thing that government can actually conduct war, and that war's bad. But nobody ever thought that they would actually seize control over every facet of our lives, because that was not delegated to them. They didn't have the power. There was no path to get there. The problem was that when they wanted to get there, they just started going there, and we didn't say, hey, you can't be there. That's all we had to do. That's all the counties and states needed to do, was say, hey, you can't be there. And we would have resolved this problem. So this right here, folks, is laying out the fact that this argument that the general assemblies, that these assemblies out there that are calling themselves sovereign citizens and so forth, they are living under the model of the monarchical form of government, as if Britain had never been rejected and that we never instituted the government that we did, that we didn't institute this republican form of government. See, you can't have it both ways, folks. Either you're still under the monarchical rule, or we're actually under the government that we ratified and created. The history proves otherwise. History proves that we actually have sovereign states, and that within the states, they are republics, and those states are formed by counties. That's what history proves. So how is it that we romanticized, and how is it that, you know, these things have come forward? It's easy. When you understand how deception and how misinformation can be exploited and used and mystified and romanticized, then it's easy to see how the adversary, how the evil one, is using any and every way he can to keep us from uniting on that divine document called the Constitution. And so we actually have ranks within the patriots that are actually calling the Constitution the problem. And they're actually abandoning the Constitution when the real solution is demanding compliance and enforcement to that Constitution. That's it. That's what we've said. That's how we're moving forward this entire year. This is the direction we are going. And so with that, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. And we will be diving more into the scales of liberty and everything else very soon. God bless.
Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Mobiusstrip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Mobiusstrip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you.